Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Katie, it's going to be a good one. Did you go to the WIT thing this morning?
I actually did not. Just a slacker.
Well, they're getting ready for their WIT Connect, right?
Isn't they are. Coming up? It's coming up in June, very soon.
And then we should be there?
Yeah, right? We're definitely going to be there.
And you're going to be hosting that again?
Yeah, yeah.
That's second year for you, right?
Yeah. We're going to be broadcasting live from the Georgia Aquarium.
Good stuff. But we're going to have a great show today.
We got
folks from Adrenaline Agency and Karen West PR. And we're going to kick off with the Adrenaline folks, Sean Keithley and Gina Bleedorn. Welcome, Sean, Gina.
Hi, thank you.
Good morning.
Can you, one of you, raise your hand and tell us about Adrenaline? Who's in charge of that? Sean?
Sure. Yeah, Sean will start. Thanks for having us.
Sure.
Adrenaline is an experience design agency, and we're helping our clients really navigate a world that's been disrupted by technology. What makes us unique is we're helping people do everything from their brand to making it real in their physical environment. So if you think about what we do, think about a agency that's doing branding and advertising, but we're also connecting that when those same consumers hit those physical spaces and expect that same expectation. So that's what makes us very unique in the way we're bringing experiences to our clients.
So now you're working with mostly retail, or what type of clients are attracted to your firm?
Well, we service retail is the broader term, because a lot of those firms and agency companies need the physical space to bring their product to fruition. So banking and financial is a good example, mm-hmm. but we're seeing the same thing happen with healthcare. And then to a big extent, even sports. We have sports clients, and it's about engagement, but ultimately they need people to come, see the show.
Physically.
That's right.
Now, isn't that, we've had some e-commerce folks on here before, and I was a little surprised that most sales still happens in a physical location, and it's not e-commerce.
Well, I think they're both very, very important. And that's what's so complicated in today's environment. There's so many channels, and consumers want all of them. And really, in a lot of the businesses we help, the human component is really, really important. So they're supported by e-commerce, but there's a lot of things that happen when people meet with people.
And then when you're working with your customer on the people side of the business, how open are they for getting advice in that area from a marketing firm?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what we do so well. We start with strategy and think about their audience, and we help them create brands that are meaningful to their clients. And when there's people involved, it's about advice and human interaction.
And so, but how do you kind of move them mentally from to embrace that more instead of just the transactional mind that a lot of retail establishments have?
Well, in financial as an example, there's a lot of things that have changed for them. So there's no more just about cashing checks and visiting the store for those transactional environments. It's about life moments when they actually need real advice. And so we're helping those clients create brand personalities that attract those people, but they pay that off when those people come into those spaces and need that real advice.
Now, Gina, what's your role with the firm?
Chief Experience Officer.
Okay, so you're working with these experiences every day.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. We felt that being an agency in the experience design business, we needed to have that at the forefront of how we view these client engagements. So we help them think about their brand experience in totality. And that's really the cornerstone of how we think it. It is about brand experience at every touch point. And the touch points have exploded because of digital channels. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, the lion's share of experience design agencies are digital. If you Google it, it's all digital agencies. We very much believe in expanding that into the physical too. And as Chief Experience Officer, it's my job to make sure that their entire branded experience is taken into account when we're thinking about any individual touch point.
Now, when you're working with a customer, it seems like a lot of energy would be placed on attracting a new customer and not so much on keeping an existing customer. Do you find that as well?
I think it's very much a balance of both. Our clients today struggle, I think, with not doing enough with their existing customers.
So you think there's opportunity in that area for a lot of...
Absolutely. And we've seen more of them turn to that in recent days. There's not as much experience paid attention to existing customers. Big data, everyone talks about big data, but certain industries, especially the retail is ahead. The financial industry that we work heavily in is quite behind. And then other industries that we also work in, like healthcare, are well behind that, mm-hmm. where they really are trying. They have all the data, but they've not done that much with it. They've not actioned on it. And that's really the key. And you have more data about your existing customers.
Right.
So there's a heck of a lot more you can do for them that's not being done. We're just seeing the tip of the iceberg be penetrated with opportunity there. But we're, again, seeing that movement now to, wait a minute, we've got a bank of existing customers.
Why are we ignoring all
this? Why are we just trying to get new ones into the funnel when we could be doing so much more with the ones we already have?
So now, when you're working with a customer and you're kind of sharing those ideas with them, how do you work, like maybe a 100-day plan or something with an existing, like, okay, we got them. So now let's do something with them for X number of days or whatever. Do you do something like that?
We do. We very much believe in starting with discovery and strategy, whatever the engagement. And oftentimes we don't want to plan out much more than the next 30 to 60 days until we do that, because there are unknowns that every situation is different. There's obviously a lot of things we bring to the table with industry knowledge and knowledge of experience and channels in general, but we have to immerse ourselves into the client first. So we begin with that strategy and discovery, and then we work on a plan for how we're going to roll that out, whatever the decisions may be. We don't want to just put them into a product fit of things that they may not need.
So then you learn about whatever their challenges are having. And then you implement, though, but you don't just implement the top of the funnel strategy. You're trying to implement a full.
Exactly. And sometimes it might be that we do need more in the funnel in general, depending on what it is. But we absolutely have to understand their pain points and problems first. Give them a look in the mirror, which oftentimes is, you would think they could see themselves, but they don't. We give them that external view, and then we give them the advice for what they should do with it.
Now, how do you have to kind of go really to basics and really define what branding is to them?
Some more than others. Some more than others. I think that the most progressive businesses today are the ones that value and really cherish their brand and understand it's the most valuable asset they have. It's not their logo. It's not the building signage. It's not their app. It's not their product. It's their reputation. It's the gut feeling anyone thinks about. And that affects how they recruit talent. That affects what other competitors think of them. That affects everything. So I will say there's always some amount of education of what is branding today. And we do that first and foremost. And some clients, they get it instantly, and others need a little more of a journey to understand.
Now, Sean, can you share a story maybe of a firm, you don't have to name their name, but maybe how you work with them to kind of tweak or maybe pivot a little bit on their brand, or they thought it was one thing and then maybe did research and learned it was something else?
Well, sure. There's plenty. There's one that's especially exciting. We've got a community bank that's going to ring the bell on the stock exchange in New York tomorrow. And when we met them 6 years ago, they talked about having a vision, a personality, an amazing culture, a really specific strategy that was going to, you know, really align them strategically differently from their clients, but they didn't have a brand reputation to the market that matched who they were. And so we ended up getting to know them through discovery.
Did they think they did?
No, they knew they didn't. They basically outgrew their name.
Mm-hmm.
And as they moved into new markets, there was market confusion. And they had to go out to fix that. And they wanted to be able to create a brand they could invest in, and there wouldn't be any confusion. But what they didn't realize is how much pride it created with their existing team, mm-hmm. because it didn't change really who they were. It just more matched who they were. And if you fast forward 5 years, they're in new markets, they're growing. There's no problems with brand confusion, and recruiting's different. They can go to other community banks and recruit their best people because their brands aren't standing for anything. And so that's just a fun example where even a community bank's not immune to creating branded, you know, experiential experiences.
Now, can you walk us through kind of the process? You said it took 5 years. This isn't like you can make a brand like tomorrow, then we're a brand, then we say we're this and we stand for this, and then I am. And
well, right. 5 years goes from being a small community bank to launching in the stock exchange.
Right. So
a lot of that's growth.
But what are the baby steps that from internally that they had to do in order to make that?
Well, we like this example even better because they tried to do it on their own. And that's even more fun because they realize how complicated it is. Mm-hmm. So by the time we met them, they were really frustrated. And they talked about there was an agency local in their market that was handing them a list of names saying, do any of these work? And the answer was, we don't know.
Like, what do you mean names?
Well, they wanted to change the name of the bank.
Oh, change the name of
the bank. So here's a few options. And when we met them, we said, no, let's get to know you guys. What's special about you? What's unique? Tell us about your heritage. Let's talk about your audience. What are the values that you bring that are shared? And we ended up creating an identity that really was a manifestation of who they were.
It was authentic.
It was. But then it's the culture of the team, right? So we had to launch that internally to employees. They had to understand that. When they asked the question, why'd you change their name? Were you bought? They were ready with that talk track. They controlled the message. Mm-hmm. And then they went to the market and said, we're big enough to serve you, but we're small enough to be community minded. And then it's all the channels. And that's where you get into our service set. It's the advertising channels, the online channels, the mobile, but then it's the physical branch channel. And so we had to augment all 45 of their locations. And so that's really a good example.
So when you say augment, what does that mean?
Well, it's interesting. When someone fixes their brand and they have physical outpost, they start to really question, when a customer visits that outpost, is that really how I want them thinking about my brand? And so that's what we're helping solve.
So it's not just changing a color palette.
It's way more than that. And then a lot of times function changes. And we mentioned the disruption that's happening, and we'll talk about this morning. But when technology changes what happens in your physical location, you can't just ignore that maybe people have done research or they've checked in online. They're coming in expecting to walk into the website and that extension of the experience mm-hmm. to be there. So it's both aesthetic and it's for the brand, but it's how the employees are going to interact and serve the client better.
And then, so how do you kind of drill that down to the, you know, to the teller, like so that they're behaving in the manner that's congruent with the mission and the message of the company?
The teller's going away. You know, a lot of it's about more of a universal employee that's there to serve you. Mm-hmm. And the reality is there's technology now that counts the money and does all those things. You can take a picture of your check on your mobile app. So it's less about coming in and saying to the teller, I need to do something. It's more about an employee that's standing up waiting for you to come in saying, why'd you come in today?
Right. And more then, customer service than a specific role.
And able to help you. Mm-hmm. There's no more of the days where there's five different roles in the bank.
Right.
And I do
They're
three things. Yeah, that's right. I need to do something else, open a loan or an account. Let me go get someone else. Mm-hmm. You know, those days are going
away. The specialists are going away.
They have to because they have to invest in their digital channels. Mm-hmm. They need amazing apps. Cybersecurity is a concern. You can't be inefficient with the people. And then the expectations are changing. The consumer expectations. We talk about the DMV experience. Everybody dreads their driver's license, you know, renewal, all the chairs you line up in, and that's not going to work in the industries we're serving anymore.
Now, how about when your clients are multi-generational? How are you able to incorporate some of these changes with people that are fearful of change just as a rule?
The easiest thing to think about, you can create an experience for the youngest generation that everyone will accept. But you cannot create an experience for the oldest generation and hope that the kids will experience it.
Right.
And so that's really important. And the people part of this part of our business is very important. We have very realistic conversations with clients. They want to rebrand. They want to create a reputation. They want to do a lot of amazing things. But we audit the talent in the spaces. And are they the right people? And can they get on board and deliver? And in different organizations, there's some change required.
Now, are you kind of doing personality assessments? Are you helping them to really kind of understand the type of person that has to work in this environment, that this new environment?
Well, you really are needing someone that's not a specific banker, let's say, for banking. They need to be a people person. You need to be able to train them the products and services. But what you can't train is just have someone give great service and to really, really care. We're seeing people leave retail establishments and come into to banking environments. We're seeing frontline staff in healthcare coming out of retail. And so it's not so much, you know, a personality test, is it the job expectation has changed. It is right now about delivering a branded experience. And that's not the order taker of the, you know, of yesterday.
I think even maybe more notable than that is we're creating personalities for the brands themselves. So there's a methodology called archetype, Mm-hmm. Archetypal mapping. It's basically universal personalities that exist in the collective unconscious of us all,
right.
the sage, the creator, the rebel, whoever that might be. When we get involved from a strategic perspective, we actually begin there and we create a human personality for the brand. Human brand personalities that are aligned with singular archetypes have been proven to be economically and marketly valuated to be more successful because people can relate to them in the way people can relate to people.
Right.
And that ultimately creates a brand that employees can rally around and then customers can rally around as well.
Now, when the company kind of takes on these archetypes, does that mean that people are certain, that tells you who your customer could be and it also tells you who they aren't, right?
Exactly.
Because it works both ways.
Exactly.
And same with employees.
Exactly. We actually pair a methodology called combining shared values with the brand personality. So number one, we have to create a brand personality and then we have to figure out based on who your brand personality is, will people like you and will the right people like you? Then we think about values. Most companies have internal values. They call them core values. We believe in integrity and honesty and right. stability, sure. But the best brands are ones that have outward facing values that match their customers' values. Like REI is a great one. REI values being outdoors and hiking and camping and skiing. And a few years back on Black Friday, they closed
right.
their online sales and their stores and had an opt-outside campaign to prove that they really do believe in the fight against commercialism. And ultimately, REI is, they're actually a co-op. They completely right. align with the values of their audience's values. And even if they're not your own values, they're not mine. I love shopping, actually. But if I'm going to buy sports, camping, whatever equipment, I know that's what REI stands for. So it's actually a matter of figuring out your personality, but then figuring out what values you have that are in common with the values of the people you want to serve and making them outwardly visible.
And it has to be authentic and true.
That's the most important part, because if you are disingenuous with what you say you're going to do and then you don't do it, that is the biggest trust breach of all. And all consumers, especially millennials, who will just, they're not loyal. They will go to the next one in about 2 seconds and they see right through it. You have to be genuine to who you are. And that's the idea of what do you really value and how does that overlap with what your audience values? And if there's no overlap, you need to either consider what you believe in as an organization or consider the audience you're going after.
Now, you mentioned that millennials are kind of moody when it comes to brands and they're quick to change. Is that something that historically brands were big things that people trusted and were lifelong purchasers of whatever that thing was that they had as a kid? And they probably still drink the same soda they drink when they were five. In today's world, when people are kind of fickle, how do you kind of elevate the brand to create some level of stickiness? Or is that even important today?
It's not just important. It's absolutely critical. So the brands that will survive 20 years from now, 10 years from now, are the ones that create value, meaning, and advocacy. Millennials and even Gen Z more than millennials identify personally with the brands they choose, everything from shoes to handbags to shirts to the brand of soda that they drink. They really do. You have to identify a relationship and cultivate it and have a meaning far beyond just the product that you're serving. And if you don't, you will be usurped by another one that does in 2 seconds.
But how strong are those ties, though?
Depends on the type of product, depends on the type of industry. Certainly things like CPG are, I'm going to change razor blades and mascara without thinking much. But my bank is a much more longstanding relationship. So the more service oriented the business is, the more important the experience becomes. That's why we especially focus on those businesses that provide services on an ongoing basis that are hopefully lifelong. So, but the time frame, it is dependent on the type of service and the type of product you're offering. but you want to elevate the relationship to be like a personal relationship, and you have to keep cultivating it. You can't just get married and then ignore your spouse. You have to keep listening to them and talking and evolving to them with them.
Now, when you have those levels of intimate relationships with the service provider, sometimes it's difficult for the consumer to separate the actual human being that's their contact with the brand that they're with. And so if that human that they're interacting with is fantastic and super service, and then they move to a competitive, whatever that is, sometimes the customer follows that person. How do you protect against that?
Yeah, that's a great point. Sean was talking about that. It happens a lot, especially in industries like banking, where they come to trust a singular person.
Right. My banker.
Exactly.
It's not my brand.
Exactly. And you know what? To your point, it happens all the time. However, the more connected with that brand the person is, the less likely, A, that person is likely going to leave the bank, the employee. And B, if the brand has no connection to the consumer and the consumer only had a connection to the person, you bet they're going to leave with that person. That's why your brand, your people, and the place in which your people interact, we call it a brand, place, and culture fusion, need to be in sync to have the right customer experience. Or you're right, people are going to take customers with them if they leave.
And you have to create, that's part of what you do, is kind of create this holistic kind of solution.
That's right. And back to your last point, I think in those cases where it is a human connection, those brands are making sure those employees are sticky.
Right.
And that's where this comes back into play. And everything Gina said is applicable for that. You know, how do we make this an amazing place to work? And how do we empower people to be successful? How do we give them an emotional connection? We talk a lot of decisions are made with emotion. And that's what we're trying to do, is create these emotional connections. And that's a big part of retention with key people. But that's a good example of how a brand standing out starts to attract other key talent. And that's an acquisition strategy in some of these cases where it's a human-to-human connection with consumer to provider.
Now, you mentioned some of the industries, but can you share like kind of the main industries that you work in?
Well, we really have been in financial for 15 years. And the main reason, we've got a lot of wonderful clients, and then they were completely disrupted in 2008 on a two-prong approach. One, that iPhone changed their world, but then the meltdown. Mm-hmm. And so you're seeing a lot of consolidation, the big brands are winning, and now the small community brands that are not giving up are helping. So our business has gotten very busy. But then there's other industries that are pulling us in because they have the exact same problems.
Right.
And so healthcare is next behind. And they are just about to follow the exact same path. We've hired a lot of our team members from the retail world. So we bring a lot of the retail thinking. We do some retail business. We're excited about sports. The world of sports is changing. And you think about what's going on with cable cords being cut and everything else is happening, there's never been more desire for just engagement. And so engagement is what we do, whether it's socially right, or driving people. So as we grow, we're expanding, but really we want that service retail component to it. We're really good at that. We need that human connection to be important. And then it's got to be cool and fun to work on, you know, experiential work. It's for us, it's about attracting the best talent in the city to work here. So. Right.
One of the best examples of that in sports is our client, the Atlanta Hawks, we're their agency. And that client is a fit for us because although we're engaging with them on social and in advertising and out of home and traditional and digital channels, we are trying to get butts in seats. We are trying to get people to come to the stadium and have an in-person experience with sports and have an advocacy tie to a sports team in this particular case that maybe doesn't have a ton of superstars. And that becomes all the more challenging. We cannot build a brand around the personalities alone of the Hawks players, which is how the NBA industry largely is. Their individual player brands are as strong as their team brands. So that's an extra challenge. But that's an example of really what we consider to be an experiential brand, where we have to start in virtual and digital channels and bring them all the way through into a physical experience. And the more human experiences you have with a brand, the more loyal you'll be to that brand.
And what's the pain that your prospective customers are having where adrenaline's the solution?
Usually it's a couple of fronts. One, it's this, we have a brand problem. So we need to reimagine
ourselves. But can
ourselves.
They even def- can they even self-assess that they have a brand problem?
A lot of times we have leadership change. And that's a great example. Or maybe companies combine and the identity is now mixed. And so there's definitely triggers. We don't beg people to work with us. You know, we really are proud of what we do and we're thought leaders and we speak, and clients call us and say, we've got a problem. And those are, you know, things that would happen. New leadership, our cultures have emerged. The other thing is if there's a new manifestation of the physical world. Online brands are starting to make physical outposts for the first time. Offline brands have to make the online and offline combined. And then again, when these companies merge, and we're seeing a lot of consolidation and a lot of service retail, and that creates a great trigger for us to help.
To your point about a brand problem, and they often don't necessarily say exactly, I have a brand problem. They have an engagement problem. They have an engagement problem for new customers, meaning acquisition. They have an engagement problem of existing customers, meaning they don't care about me or like me, or I just did market research and my NPS scores are way down and I don't know why I thought they loved me because they bought stuff I sell. And we have an employee engagement problem.
Right.
And any of those, the answer is absolutely going to be a brand strategic solution. On the other end, what Sean was talking about, sometimes they have physical locations where they're building or they're going into a new area and they realize that they don't have any strategy behind the design. And it's ultimately because they don't often have a brand experience purpose to ladder up to. So those are the two common ways in where we're solving client problems.
Good stuff. And if somebody wanted to learn more and have a more substantive conversation with you, what's the best way to?
AdrenalineAgency.com.
AdrenalineAgency.com. Well, thank you both for being part of the show today.
Thank you.
All right. Next up. You ready, Chad? This is your big moment.
I was born for it.
Chad Shearer with Karen West PR. Welcome.
Thank you.
Did you learn anything there or was all preaching to the choir?
I learned quite a bit, and I applaud the people that media trained them because they were very well-spoken.
You think they were media trained?
Something I know for a fact.
They
had to have been. That was pretty good. I've had some clients on air and in interviews, and if you haven't, then you have a future beyond adrenaline.
So there were tells? There's media training tells?
They know their stuff and articulated it very well.
All right. Well, enough about them, Chad. Tell us about Karen West. How are you serving folks?
Karen West PR is a lifestyle and entertainment PR company. We have been at it for nearly 13 years. It'll be 13 years this December.
Before it was cool.
I think it was always cool. Then the TV tried to make it cool with reality shows and other rom-coms or whatnot. And now it's... just a very stressful, stressful career choice.
So, but Karen West is unique in the, I guess, the music festival angle or side of your business.
And that's one of our verticals. That is specifically what I'm tasked with. We have about a dozen music festivals that range anywhere from Alaska, Albuquerque, and Phoenix to right here in Atlanta and the Southeast.
But let's talk about how that evolved and how that came about.
Before the company's namesake and my business partner and I got together, she was the original PR person for the last several years of Music Midtown before it took a hiatus. When that went away and her and I got together and started piecing this together, music festivals were looking to fill a void in Atlanta, and we were the first call that they made. So we did stuff like the Echo Project, Counterpoint.
But were you just the PR people for a festival, or were you the kind of management firm for the festival?
No, we do the public relations leading up to it, trying to get them on TV, radio, print, online, every avenue you possibly could think, and now social media. And then once the festival itself happens, we handle media operations. So we are dealing with the photographers in the pit, any kind of crisis situations that happen on site. That could be everything from weather to an artist canceling and more serious things.
So you're handling all the PR around these festivals, and the festivals are trusting you because you've been doing this for a while? You're kind of good at it.
That's the story. That's the story. Yeah. obviously grew out of Atlanta on this, but as we started building relationships with media all over the country, these media people would tap us as recommendations to branch out into Phoenix. So Phoenix, for example, we have about 8 large format music festivals and over 200 events a year that we're doing. So we have a constant presence there, which is also branches out into Albuquerque, Tucson. And
then it's grown just organically?
Yeah, it's very organic. We have no trouble saying no to clients if it's not a fit for us, if we don't feel that we can make an impact. Ultimately, if we're not passionate about a project, we're not going to necessarily jump on it. Even if that person happens to be passionate themselves, we need to know that we can make a positive impact for them and for their event.
Now, is it music agnostic, or are there certain genres that you gravitate toward?
I don't think anyone that goes to the music festivals is listening to this program at present. So I'll go to say, fortunately, unfortunately, we skew more into the electronic music festival world. Mm-hmm. We did start out doing a bit rock, you know, with Music Midtown actually is a good example. That was a multi-genre festival.
Is that unique to have multi-genre festivals?
No, I think it's always been a present. I mean, you have Coachella or Bonnaroo that has those. Hip-hop and electronic music that might have been an afterthought at those festivals in the past is now a bit more at the forefront. Mm-hmm. The evolution of electronic music being increasingly more popular has been the reason why the bigger budgets are falling in the EDM festival world.
And then, but are the actual festival, is the work different for EDM or hip-hop as opposed to country or multi-genre?
No, I would say if you have a recognizable artist on your roster, if there is a Neil Young or a U2 or whatnot, that's reactionary PR. If you can't get PR on that, you shouldn't be in the business to begin with. As of recently, because I can get artists that you might find on another, you know, like a dance radio station in market, that makes it a bit easier. Otherwise, we have to start storylines that might not necessarily exist because people don't know these artists. And electronic music has been different or a little bit more difficult to push into that.
Now, is radio still a factor with the advent of streaming?
Not as much, but it's also being an older gentleman, especially for the demographic. I kind of love it when I do get into, you know, some of the other, they'll play 2 or 3 of our artists out of maybe 80 artists. I do like being able to have those as mentions and as earned media hits. Otherwise, the bigger outlets are going to be our online outlets 9 times out of 10.
Now, from an artist standpoint, streaming is the lifeblood nowadays, right?
Streaming is big.
Or these festivals, are they arm in arm with artist is going to get paid? Is the really the performance where they get paid nowadays?
That'll be, they get paid very heavily once they're on stage. We also will tap into streaming services that will be part of their contract on the front end, so they know that we're going to be streaming the entire performance. And then we go and turn and sell that to, you know, Sprite or, you know, whatever, Axe body spray. Mm-hmm. So that people that are at home can watch it on their laptops, watch it on their TV or whatnot, and feel part of the process. And these advertisers are able to, you know, have impact beyond just what they are doing on site.
Now, is that part of your role, is to find those kind of sponsorships and partners for the festivals?
Absolutely not.
That is not part of
it. No, I try to, it's a little bit of a church and state, try to keep that separate. The difficult thing is a lot of outlets that used to be true journalism. I won't name names. And ultimately it become pay to play.
So you're saying more and more of that?
Yeah, more and more of that, which kind of ties my hands.
So the blurring of the lines of journalism and advertising?
Yeah, there's still true ones out there. You won't see billboard, for example, you won't see them try to shake us down for ad dollars just to run a story. If it's a viable story and you're making a viable pitch, it's going to make it. But there's younger ones that, I mean, I think that blogs are great if they have a purpose, but if your purpose is just to gain access to one of my events, then it's a waste of time and I'm not going to spend money with you anyway. So, you know, the festivals will ultimately ask for our recommendations, but I try to stay out of it.
So when you say church and state, it's how are you defining church? Who's the church and who's the state?
That's a good question. I don't know how to answer that. I would say if you have I just leave it, you know, to make it clear to any media outlet that I'm not going to spend money to get to the story. I'd much rather work with you to define what the merits of that story would be so that we're having a true dialogue. This is true earned media and not just because I have a banner ad that we spent money on your website or a commercial.
So, but is it more that it's not transparent, or is it more the, you know, like you, it shouldn't bother you that they ask you to pay, but if they ask you to pay in order for you to get something, that's where I would have a problem.
It doesn't bother me that they ask to pay, and I'm gladly pass them along to marketing, but it does bother me that they're trying to hold coverage hostage.
Right. That's where to me, that it's a transparency issue more so than.
And it's near impossible to know that unless you are either on the PR or the marketing side. You know, I don't think the consumer wholly knows that a lot of the stuff that their content they're seeing that has been purchased.
And that's true from the largest media outlets that exist. I mean, it's not just in the music industry.
Yeah.
Like, you can see that on traditional media every day.
Well, I think that you see that with just the evolution and the creation of what people call fake news, which ultimately every outlet is going to be opinionated in some way or form. And, you know, while it'd be great to have a metric to define what is going to be true, that I don't think necessarily exists at this point. So that is going to be dictated on advertisers. I'm going to tell you something sensational because more people are going to visit the site or turn into the TV. And because of that story, and if they do that, more advertisers are going to advertise. And that's just,
right. I mean, I think it's cyclical. I mean, I think back in the day, it kind of comes and goes, like in favor of the buyer and in favor of the seller. And then right now, the consumer has to be a little more attentive and pay and vet things a little more.
I agree. And voice up as well.
Right. And choose not to participate in some of these things that are holding news hostage.
Right. I mean, it's a lot less critical and crucial on my side because the majority of what we're doing is entertainment.
Right. The stakes are, I mean, lower, but not for your clients. I mean, the stakes are pretty high for them.
I think if we sell tickets to that particular side of what we do, then fantastic.
Now, the music festival part of your business, just one part of what you guys do. But is that where you spend the bulk of your personal time?
Majority of what I do is making sure that the employees are happy or as happy as they can be, and the music festival side, yes. I do the majority of the traveling. On the flip side, my business partner kind of will run the other half of the company, which would be more regional and be everything from national and global brands, like fashion brands, art galleries. We have a fleet of restaurants that are wonderful.
Like franchises or independent?
Mostly independent. I think our biggest independent would be a group called Concentrix. They have everything from Molly B's and the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium to, you know, two Urban Licks and Parrish and all that. So they're pretty popular. Beyond that, a lot of them have been independent, but we also are a big source for national brands looking to make impact within the local and regional markets.
Now, how's Atlanta as a food city, your opinion?
I am concerned for Publix and Kroger on how they're going to continue on.
Really?
I think the food culinary scene, it continues to grow here. And I think people are liking more and more to eat out, which has been fantastic for my clients. It's also difficult for them because it's the newest thing has to be the newest thing. And that's where, why we actually have a job, because something like Concentrix, where they've got restaurants that have been around like 12 years, how do you keep them new, fresh, and exciting, and not just the 6-month flash in the pan?
Well, I mean, we do a show here on Mondays, Culinary Atlanta, where we spotlight restaurants. Mm-hmm. And it just, I can't even wrap my head around how the math of the restaurant business, how they can make it, where it seems like every week there's a new restaurant and you go to it and you're like, this is amazing. It's not like bad restaurants are happening. I mean, no. It's like just one another good one. Now you're picking between good restaurants. Yeah. Where back in the day, it would have been like, there'd be a handful of really good restaurants. And now it seems like there's a really good restaurant in almost every neighborhood.
And it's, I mean, to their part, it's, you know, how to build that brand and create that loyalty and keep those people coming back. You know, Atlanta has been known and continues to grow as one of the biggest music cities in the country. But we're also, the new rock stars are the chefs that are coming in.
Right.
I think those are the ones that are able to open up different concepts and locations and hopefully have that consistent brand translate between concept to excite people to continue to go that. The ones that are the one-off, the mom and pops, I think that that is going to be continually a struggle and very difficult.
So you're saying both sides of the equation are going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult for the mom and pop and for these kind of large grocery store chains.
Well, I mean, I'm being a little facetious on that, to that end. I think that Kroger and Publix probably don't have anything to worry about. But
well, they have to change their experience. You're seeing them look more and more like Whole Foods than they used to.
There's one in my neighborhood that has a bar inside it. You can't take your beer down the aisles, but you can grab a glass of wine or a beer or whatnot.
Right. Just like when you were a kid, right?
Yeah, exactly. Same experience.
So there's changes happening. Now, do you think that Atlanta could ever pull off like a South by Southwest here now that we have the film industry, we got the esports and the gaming, we have music, we have food? Do you think we can pull off a South by Southwest event where it's like kind of a couple weeks and you bring in all these industries, disparate kind of overlapping industries?
I think it's going to be difficult. I think there is one entity that is currently doing it. And it's this A3C. It is a sort of hip hop music for South, like a South by Southwest for hip hop music that's been going on for a decade plus, and in different various locations throughout the city. I've seen some of the gaming. I saw a film project that didn't translate here in Atlanta, but I know that they had seen some success in California. So it's difficult. We're very particular. We're a neighborhood, you know, town. We get scattered, you know, and if something's two blocks off, it might be two blocks out of our range and I don't want to go, mm-hmm. you know, that's very, very difficult. And I think that that's a little bit why building brands as you do and as PR on our side is important. It's creating something that makes it a destination and makes people want to, you know, I have to be there.
So now part of your firm's offerings are crisis PR.
Yes.
Is that like the fun part or the worst part?
If you're on the back end, when you're like, wow, that we executed that flawlessly, I would say that that is hilarious and wonderful. But no, it can be extremely stressful. It can be, as I said, weather related. It can be, on the restaurant side, someone getting a bad health score or, you know, chefs leaving and being disparaging, or we've had deaths at festivals, where we have to be delicate and communicate the right message to the consumer, but also protect the client.
Is it something that like the, it's almost like insurance for your clients, where to have somebody that at least is thinking about some of these bad things that can happen so that you are ready to go in case they do happen?
Absolutely. I mean, we have a full, very extensive crisis plan that involves everything from a flowchart to who is communicating, who's able to speak, dedicated spokesperson like myself or my business partner, tied in with security, tied in with festival founders. There's a whole very complex, kind of plan, but it exists and it is good insurance. Hopefully we never have to use it.
But I would think that this is one of the benefits of working with a firm like yours that have been doing this for a while, in this, that you have kind of best practices already in place so that it's not starting from a blank sheet of paper for a lot of this stuff. You already have kind of the outline of a game plan of how you're going to handle this. It just may be then tweaked for who is the specific spokesperson. Kind of the messaging. We already got a ballpark of what we're going to say.
That's a lot of what we've been hired on before. We've position ourselves as experts on the crisis front. And it's something that, I think is a selling point to a lot of clients, but I don't think it's anything that anyone wants to ever tap. It is something that the insurance in there is that if we do have to use it, we do execute it. It's insurance that, 9 times out of 10, it means your entity will continue on and the damage will be at a minimum.
Right. Because a lot of these, especially in the firms that you were talking about, one crisis could be the end of the company.
Absolutely.
If it's not played out properly.
And the unfortunate thing is, and I'll give you a good example, we were brought in to do PR for a festival 45 days out that was local. I won't name it, but you can probably figure out what it is. So because the national team was not making an impact locally. Weather crisis happened to that music festival and people took to social media and people destroyed it and it didn't come back. We were not tapped to do the crisis end of it. And the people that were on this had never had an experience with an outdoor music festival. So they were starting fresh.
Right.
So that was unfortunate. It was one of the world's biggest festivals and it's no longer coming back to Atlanta. And, people were saying that they walked 45 miles from where the site was back to the city of Atlanta. And if you did that, you didn't pass a gas station. You're either walking in circles or you're just not that well educated. But that doesn't matter. It hit social media.
Right.
And the crisis was out of control on Twitter and Facebook.
And it's like, what our previous guests were talking about, branding, whether you're branding or you're not, you're branding. If the messages are happening, whether they're true or not, they're still happening.
Yes.
So you have to be able to counter that.
And it's, some clients just want to, they will take to Facebook and, we protect them against this, but we should start deleting all these comments, or we should start hiding them at the least, or making people inability to do that. And unless they're going to be abusive and use curse words and whatnot, it's better to have the dialogue happen and respond to it in a
as like a normal way. Human being, like our previous guest said as well, like this human to human is critical in all of this stuff. Have to have the trust, you have to have the authenticity if you want to do business in today's world, because there's too many outlets. You were talking about bloggers earlier. Everybody in essence now is the media.
Yes.
To some degree.
Yes.
Whether they're the media for their 8 family members or, or 1,000 people are going to hear what they have to say about everything. And it's now public.
Correct.
So you got to manage towards that or else you're going to have problems.
It's especially disparaging to restaurants. And I'd say that the biggest outlet that causes us the most challenges, Yelp.
Right. And those kind of things
matter.
Right.
Anybody.
Exactly. And the customer doesn't understand kind of the mechanics of how those services work. To them, they see it and it's true. And then it's a lot of the time to react accordingly.
Right. And we respond to each and every one. Don't respond as, oh, this is the big PR company that's putting the wall between you and the client. We find out the information, then we connect them with the GM or somebody that can respond to it properly and on a human level. So you have a one-on-one interaction.
Because a lot of, and that's important for people to understand about those kind of companies, that sometimes a bad review can be it could be a competitor. It could be an employee that had a bad time. It could be anybody for whatever reason, just shredding this company. That has nothing to do with even if they're a real customer.
Right. And for most outlets, it's very difficult to get those removed.
Right.
So,
or even buried a lot of times.
We can do that.
So, what is the, so your customer, your perfect prospects are in the restaurant, kind of more creative industries, it seems like?
Yeah, I would say so. The way I explain it to my mother is if you go out to have a good time, we represent it probably in some capacity, from from getting your hair and nails done at salons, right, to going to an art gallery, to the wine and beer that you sip at your art gallery before you go to dinner, and then go to see the show that we produced that night.
But it's the entrepreneur as artist, almost.
Creative folks, I would say. Yeah, there's people that have a definite direction and vision. And, you know, more beyond just the art, want to make an impact. And, you know, that's why we decided to start this company in Atlanta, is because we felt that we could have an impact in a major city. And as the city grows, it grew around us. And so that we were part of the core, and that would have been difficult in other markets. Not to say that we haven't spread to other markets, but Atlanta was a perfect setting for us.
Now, when you do spread to the other markets, do you find you're getting PR business around the other services you have in the markets that you're serving through the music festivals?
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily music festivals. With the Fry Company,
right,
is America's oldest bootmaking company. They put us into Nashville and a couple other markets to help make impacts there. And then that in turn, people see what we're doing for them, and it kind of, you know, organically builds out of that. But yeah, we've had great designs to replicate what we've done in Atlanta. And at the end, I think that Karen is great, what she does, and her team are fantastic at what they do. And we think that we will probably always just operate out of Atlanta and then tap people that are like-minded and local to those markets, so that we can replicate the CWPR model, but we can replicate it with authentic people from those markets versus
we're boots and putting on the ground in those areas rather than serve the people remotely from Atlanta.
Yes.
Good stuff. Now, if somebody wants to learn more about Karen West PR,
you would go to KarenWestPR.com. For those of you who don't know, Karen is spelled with a C. So it's CarenWestPR.com.
Well, Chad, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thanks for having me.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley and all our guests today. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.